The Right to Question is supported in part by the Paul Allen Family Foundation, by Humanities Montana, and by listeners like you.
Why did you start Bangtail Press?
Well, the short answer is that I saw an opportunity. There were writers in the West and in Montana in particular with whom I was eager to work. And there were books that were not being published that I thought should be published. So reinvigorating Bangtail Press, it had been in existence before, but it had been in neutral, if you will. Reinvigorating it was a way to work with writers I admire and to see some worthy books published.
And welcome to The Right Question, a program that's all about writers in the Western U.S. I'm Cherie Newman, talking with Alan Jones, who's the owner of Bangtail Press, a small publishing house located in Bozeman, Montana. We'll be talking about three new collections of Montana writers he's just released, and hear about why he chose the business of publishing during such a volatile time for the industry. Before we get into your work as a publisher, let's talk about the three new books you've just released. They're all collections of fiction, poetry, memoir pieces, and essays. And all of these pieces are written by professional writers from specific areas of Montana. Where did the idea for these books come from?
My wife and I were driving from Billings, where we have family, to our home in Bozeman. And we were tossing around ideas, things we could do as a next step. And one of the ideas that came out of that conversation was the notion of some historical anthologies, which we still may do at some point. But that discussion then segued into living writers and how could we work with the real abundance, the embarrassment of riches in Montana. The number of living writers we have here is extraordinary. And how do we work with that wealth of talent in such a way as to make sense of it? Well, we have to organize it according to region. And once we decided to organize it according to region within Montana, working with these excellent bookstores seemed like a natural next step.
There's one for Fact and Fiction Books in Missoula, one for a Country Bookshelf in Bozeman, and Elk River Books in Livingston. And in the introduction to the Fact and Fiction Reader, in a section about bookstores and how they relate to healthy communities, you write, "Every writer needs a good bookstore." Why does every writer need a good bookstore? Why don't they just need Amazon?
Through the course of a career, when you're just starting out to when you're fairly well established, a good community bookstore with whom you have a good relationship serves any number of purposes. So when you're just beginning in those essential first few years as a writer, when you're trying to make your mark, a good bookstore offers a place to meet your readers, to read your work in front of an audience, which is essential in my opinion. And it offers a place to see your work displayed. It offers some small ego gratification, frankly. You can walk down the street and see a bookstore displaying a book that you wrote. That's invaluable for a young writer. Once you're established, once you've made your mark, if you will, then a good bookstore serves as a place to meet your readers, a place to interact with the people who are buying your books and to affirm those relationships and also to affirm your work, that your work has importance and meaning. Writing is it can be a very lonely affair, and it's very difficult to meet your readers. So a good community bookstore offers the invaluable service to writers of being able to interact with the people who are reading your books. A good bookstore is an essential part of a community. And a community without a good bookstore, in some ways, is less of a community, in my opinion. You're absent a place to get together and trade ideas and meet the writers who are writing about your community. When I visit a new city, a new community, the first place I go is the bookstore. It gives me a sense for what that place is all about.
It's also a great place to find new ideas.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I like how you described the Bozeman writers generally as folks who want to carpe every damn diem. Explain why you said that.
Bozeman is an interesting place. It's where I live. I grew up in Livingston, but I'm living now in Bozeman. And whereas Missoula and Livingston have fairly well-defined writers' communities, you can define, in some ways, Missoula's community by the university. Almost every writer in the anthology has been associated or continues to be associated with the university in Missoula. And in Livingston, the community centers in some ways around those early years when Thomas McGuane immigrated to Montana and chose Livingston as his home base. That community of writers in Livingston arguably sprung out of those first few years in the 70s when McGuane was introducing the place to his friends, to Jim Harrison and Russell Chatham and those guys. Bozeman is a little harder to define. So when I was writing these introductions and trying to find a way to characterize each community, Bozeman was a little bit of a struggle for me, frankly. How do you define an area that has such a diverse group of writers? There's travel writers, there's young adult writers, there's poets, there's almost every type of writer you can think of, and they all come to the place for different reasons. And finally, what I arrived at, and I think there's some truth to this, is they are all attracted to Bozeman for the lifestyle, for the hunting, the fishing, the camping, the rafting. They are making lifestyle choices. And I think a personality that makes those sorts of choices, if you're a writer, that shows up in your work. You are inclined to be more adventurous and inclined to write on certain subjects. And so that was my attempt to define a Bozeman community of writers.
The history of writers in the Livingston area, as you said, is particularly fascinating. And I'd like you to read the first part of your introduction to an Elk River Books reader, just the first paragraph.
Sure. Considering the trajectory of Livingston's art scene, parsing it out, it keeps wanting to divide itself into at least three distinct eras. The 70s and early 80s saw the rise of Thomas McGuane and the fall of Richard Brautigan, the immigration of Russell Chatham and the poetry of Jim Harrison, William Yortzberg's Angel, and Tim Cahill's co-founding of Outside. Call these the Left Bank years. After Brautigan's willful exit in 1984, however, things kicked into neutral. It was largely status quo for the next 20-some years. While there was, of course, exceptional work coming from established writers, there was little that might argue for a sea change in the character of the community. Sam Peckinpah shoots a few holes in the Murray Hotel, and all goes quiet.
For people who don't get those obscure references to Brautigan and Peckinpah, explain what happened.
Richard Brautigan was a conspicuous part of the Livingston arts community in the late 70s and early 80s. He had a home in Paradise Valley and spent a good portion of his time there. He made some very good friends, one of whom, William Yortzberg, wrote the recent biography of Richard Brautigan, Jubilee Hitchhiker. And then he committed suicide in, I believe, 1984. And so Richard Brautigan willfully left the stage, if you will.
He was a different kind of writer. I mean, he wasn't out hiking in the mountains, writing about the mountains. He was more philosophical and avant-garde.
Indeed. And he was at the time, and you know, again, we're talking about the late 70s, early 80s. He was one of the most popular writers, certainly one of the most popular poets in America. He was a rock star in his own way. Mm-hmm. He was in the early 80s, I believe. His fortunes were changing a bit. He wasn't quite as popular as he had been at his apogee. And then William Yortzberg published Falling Angel. That was in the 80s as well. And that was made into a movie, Angel Heart, with Robert De Niro. And
scary movie, yes. And then Sam Peckinpah.
Sam Peckinpah, as you know, was the director of The Wild Bunch and many other movies. He lived in the Murray Hotel in Livingston for a number of years. And the Peckinpah Suite, I believe it may be a co-op now, but for a time you could rent the Peckinpah Suite in the Murray Hotel. And they had left the bullet holes that he had shot in the walls. They were still in the walls themselves. They hadn't repaired them. And his cowboy boots were still in evidence as well in the Peckinpah Suite. He had really small feet, apparently.
So the idea that writers just sit around in isolation is really kind of blown apart when you take a closer look at what has happened, at least in Livingston and some other areas. I know that some writers do sit, and the majority of their work is research, and it's all very isolating. But some of them get out there and have a good time.
Indeed, yeah.
Well, one of the advantages to being a publisher is that you can publish your own work if you want to. And you did in the book titled A Country Bookshelf Reader. The title of your piece is Twilight on the Little Bighorn, which I thought was a really thought-provoking story. I had a little bit of trouble tagging it with a genre. What would you say, like historical surrealism?
I suppose you might call it science fiction, although I don't think of myself as a science fiction writer. It's a reimagining of the Little Bighorn. If the dead had lingered after the battle. So here are the soldiers, the Native Americans, hanging out at the Battle of the Little Bighorn, passing the time. What would they talk about? How would they see the world progress? It started as a poem. I wrote this certainly surrealist poem about the Little Bighorn and the dead of the Little Bighorn. And that was several years ago. And then I revisited it and thought, I think it's a better story than a poem. So
I liked it.
Thank you.
It was a little bizarre, but as I said, thought-provoking. And for people who don't live in Montana and might not know, the Battle of the Little Bighorn used to be called Custer's Last Stand. It was a major battle in the mid-1800s in southeast Montana. As it is with any literary collection, I don't suppose you captured all of the writers. Are you planning on making some more of these books?
Certainly these books will be revised as we go along. I put a conspicuous tag at the end of each book. If I have missed anyone, please point them out to me. I plan on producing continuous revisions of these books as new writers enter the community and as it's pointed out to me that I have missed writers. And certainly I've missed writers. There are writers whom I approached for these books that because of scheduling conflicts or whatnot could not appear in these books. And it's already been pointed out to me that some writers were overlooked because of my own oversight.
The marketing is a little bit different. You have promised not to make any of them into ebooks, and they can only be purchased at the physical stores. So what happens if somebody in New York or Arizona wants to get a hold of one of these books?
I would encourage them to call A Country Bookshelf in Bozeman, Fact and Fiction in Missoula, Elk River Books in Livingston. All three bookstores are carrying all three books. It's not limited just to the bookstore with their name on the cover. And I'm sure they will be happy to process your credit card and put a copy in the mail to you.
And I'll also put links to those stores at the Right Question blog, which you can access by going to mtpr.org/twq. You're listening to The Right Question. I'm Cherie Newman talking with Alan Jones, owner of Bangtail Press. We'll be right back to talk more specifically about the publishing industry, and we'll read a list of all the authors who have stories in these three collections. It's impressive. If you'd like to hear this program again or share it with a friend, you'll find audio online at mtpr.org/twq. There's also a link on our Facebook page. We'll be right back. Don't go away. So let's turn our conversation to publishing. I'm just curious about what some of the challenges and joys are that you've discovered as you resurrected this company.
The challenges, I think, are finding your readers. Once you have produced a book and you have decided that this title should be read by this demographic or these are the people who would really appreciate the book that I've just published. The challenge is finding those readers, reaching out and introducing them to this particular book. Any given book, you know that there's a wide market for it or you wouldn't be publishing it. So the challenge as a publisher is to find a way of letting those people know that your book is available. In that regard, radio shows like The Right Question are an invaluable service to the publisher and to the writing community at large. The joys of publishing are, I think you can imagine, they're working with writers you admire, having a chance to shape their work, the opportunity to give some feedback that may potentially improve their work a bit. I consider that to be a great privilege. And I also do the design work on all of these titles. And As a professional editor for the last 20-some years, I've been a frustrated designer. So as designers have created covers and designed the text for books that I have worked on as an editor, I've had to resist being too overbearing in my feedback to the designers. So working as a designer on my own books gives me the opportunity to channel some of those early frustrations. It's a lot of fun to design a book cover for me. I really enjoy it.
What's a typical day like for you after you get done answering 4,000 emails? What else do you do?
It depends on the project. The bulk of my day is taken up with emails. I still do actual line editing and developmental editing on projects, both for Bangtail Press as well as for freelance clients. I still do some work for established publishers as a freelance editor and writers who have a project that they feel like needs to be tinkered with will hire me to work on their projects as an editor. So I will have in a given week I will have several of those projects that I'm juggling and going through. And then depending on deadlines, depending on where we are in production with the given book, I will be sending cover designs, cover ideas to an author for feedback. Bangtail Press is very democratic in its approach to working with authors. We are a profit share publisher, such that every dollar that comes in the door, we split equally with the author, which is highly unusual in the industry. And it's something I'm proud of to be working under these particular contracts. And that philosophy, the idea that book publishing should be a partnership with the author, ends up finding its way through most interactions with the authors. So cover design, it's a partnership. I'm throwing out ideas. I'm asking for feedback. I'm suggesting that if they have images that they would prefer to see on the cover that I'm not working with, please send them my way. We'll figure it out. So the idea of a partnership relationship with the author informs almost every aspect of Bangtail Press.
Where do you find your authors, and what's the criteria by which you choose the books that you want to publish?
Almost every author we've worked with so far is an author with whom I've previously had some sort of working relationship. Before turning to book publishing and book editing, I was an editor at the magazine Big Sky Journal for a number of years. And one of the many virtues of that job was the way it allowed me to establish working relationships with various writers, particularly in Montana. And so most of the writers I've worked with to date with Bangtail Press have been writers that I've had occasion to work with before. That certainly wasn't the case with these bookstore anthologies. There were a number of writers. The bookstore suggested that I contact. The table of contents on each of these books was a collaboration between Bangtail Press and the given bookstore. So I would come to Fact and Fiction and say, here are the writers I'm thinking about approaching. Do you have suggestions? And then Fact and Fiction would come back to me. Barbara would say, you forgot this person and this person, and we should contact this person. And out of that collaboration with the bookstores, I was introduced to a number of writers that I wasn't familiar, whom I wasn't familiar with, which was a great delight working with a whole new selection of writers.
What else do you want to say about Bangtail Press or about your work that I haven't asked you?
Book publishing in the last few years has undergone some significant changes. There have been consolidations with the bigger publishers. The Big Six are now the Big Five. Random House and Penguin just merged. Ebooks continues to dominate the landscape. The rate of growth in ebook sales has slowed. You can see at some point in the future where the rate of increase with ebooks will be more in par with the rate of growth in traditional publishing. Mid-list publishers are having a tough time of it these days, but smaller publishers like Bangtail Press, can take advantage of the volatile marketplace and publish books that might otherwise have been forgotten or overlooked, and do simultaneously a real service to readers, to writers, and sell a few books as well. A turbulent publishing landscape presents real opportunity for smaller publishers. So a publisher like Bangtail Press can take advantage of some of the uncertainties in the marketplace to publish good books and hopefully do a service both to the community of which we're a part, in this case Montana, in the Rocky Mountain West, as well as the writers who are participating in the enterprise. I really do think that book publishers and authors should be partners in a given enterprise and in the publishing of a given book. And so it's been a lot of fun experimenting with that business model in Bangtail Press. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
Let's just hear a partial list of the names of some of the authors that are in these readers.
Tim Cahill, John Clayton, Sebring Davis, Gary Ferguson, Amanda Fortini, Michael Earl Craig, Tom Groneberg, Tammy Holland, Jim Harrison, Max Yortzberg, William Yortzberg, Ed Kimmick, Walter Kern, Craig Lancaster, Thomas McGuane, Scott McMillian, Thomas McNamee, Andrea Peacock, Doug Peacock, Shan Ray, Elwood Reed, Russell Rowland, John Taillefer, E. Donald Thomas Jr., Toby Thompson, Marianne Vollers, Callan Wink,
Rick Bass, Judy Blunt, Malcolm Brooks, David Allen Cates, Phil Condon, Rick DeMarinis, Brian D. Salvatore, Chris Dombrowski, David James Duncan, Deborah Magpie Erling, Charles Finn, Dan Floris, Gwen Florio, Pete Fromm, Mark Gibbons, Fred Hafley, Hal Herring, Jeff Hull, William Kittredge, Joanna Klink, Richard Manning, Deidre McNamer, Mary Jane Nealon, Cheryl Nothe, Carolyn Patterson, Ed Skoog, Onyx Smith, Peter Stark, Robert Stubblefield, Mark Sundin, Karen Volkman, Paul Zarziski, Kim Zupan,
David Abrams, Marjane Ambler, John Barsness, John Byorth, Michelle Coriel, Edwin Dobb, Mike Finkel, Janet Fox, Liz Gans, Valerie Harms, Jack Horner, Greg Keeler, Alan Kesselheim, Melissa Quasney, Amy Leach, Keith McCafferty, Ben Michelson, Rick Newby, Aaron Parrott, Ray Ring, Jim Robbins, Patrick Straub, David Quammen, Carter Walker, Todd Wilkinson. None of the writers involved with these projects were being paid for their work. These are all professional writers who are accustomed to being paid for their work. But when they learned that the books were being produced in coordination with their favorite bookstores or their community bookstores, they were more than happy to donate their work on behalf of this project. So as I pointed out in the introductions to each of these books, I view these collections as a coming together of community. I think they are expressions, first and foremost, of collective generosity. The writers are donating their work on behalf of the bookstores and our small Montana press. I'm very, very grateful to all the authors involved for donating their work.
All right. Anything else?
I think we're good.
You ready to be put out of your misery?
That's delightful.
Alan Jones lives in Bozeman, Montana. There's more about him and Bangtail Press at mtpr.org/twq. You can also get to all of that through our Facebook page. Contact information for the bookstores that have the three Montana writers collections in stock are also on the blog. That address once again is mtpr.org/twq. Thanks a lot for listening. I'm Cherie Newman, wishing you a pile of fascinating books and lots of questions.
The Right Question is produced by Cherie Newman, with help from Barbara Thoreau and Kim Anderson. Michael Marsalek, executive producer. Beth Ann Austin, studio engineer. Music for this program was written and performed by John Floridis. The Right Question has a Facebook page, a blog, and a podcast. You'll find links to all that at mtpr.org/twq. Thanks for listening and for supporting this program.